The following podcast may contain mature themes and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the No Fear Friday edition of the No Fear Project podcast. I'm your host, Pete D'Amico. I put out the call to chat to some members of the No Fear Project Facebook group, and several volunteered. My conversation today is with member Alan Scherer. Alan has an incredible story that is inspiring and frankly uncomfortable at times. The magic happens in the discomfort. The fact that he is willing to share his rock-bottom times, as well as the highest victories, is important. Alan volunteered to talk about his fear of success. What we ended up discussing was so much more. We will hear from him right after this quick word from our sponsor, Silver Fox Athletics. If you are anything like me, you have big goals. I really wanted to become a better runner, and you guessed it, fear was stopping me. I needed a running coach. Enter Coach Andy in Silver Fox Athletics. I started working with Coach Andy and he produced the perfect customized training plan. His plan and support were just what I needed. The fear started melting away instantly. I ended up with a shiny new personal record in the half marathon and even conquered my biggest running fear of all, the 26.2-mile marathon. Coach Andy specializes in those middle and back of the pack runners like me, and even those that have never run much. Get more information about Silver Fox Athletics at silverfoxathletics.org. Also, follow Silver Fox Athletics on Instagram. While you are there, click book to get your free initial consultation with Coach Andy. Make sure to tell him you heard about Silver Fox on the No Fear Project. Welcome back. We are now joined by our guest, Alan Scherer. Alan, welcome to the No Fear Project.
It is my pleasure to be here. I'm so thankful to be a part of the great things that you're doing on this podcast. I'm really appreciative of it.
Awesome, man. Thanks for the kind words. Why don't you give us a quick introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name's Alan Scherer. I'm originally from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I'm the oldest grandson of Jimmy Pearsall, former Red Sox center fielder and 17-year Major League veteran, first public case of bipolar disorder in sports. So I've had quite a life of dealing with what mental illness is to my family, what mental illness is to me, what bipolar is in myself. I'm a photographer. I'm a runner. I'm an advocate for mental health. I'm sober, about 648 days, 649 days, something like that.
Nice.
So the most, I have a story that hopefully can resonate in most people. The struggles we go through, the avenues we use to get through them, and hopefully it shines a light on someone else's story. You know, if we can touch one other person, then we've done something really special.
Yeah. I mean, truth be told, I know you a little bit. We've talked on your podcast and what's the name of the podcast that you've put out?
The Good Fight.
The Good Fight. So I recommend everybody go take a listen to that. You could skip my episode if you want, but I thought we had a good conversation. but one of the things that I really admire about you and your family, that you and your wife really are about giving to others. I mean, you're married to a wonderful woman, Elizabeth, who is always seems to be giving back also in what she does for a living. And you're always putting out positive vibes and content, trying to connect with people. Is that just kind of part of what your household is?
Yeah. I'm helping raise a 9-year-old boy, and it's as frustrating as hell because, as we know, boys don't use their brain. All right. So it's just, we, you know, like
men either, boys, men, all the same, right?
Well, but we think about it, right? I mean, when you gain wisdom, hopefully you're using that. But as a boy, you just want to do everything. You're going to go head into everything, right? You're just going to do it. And every day it's like, is that a good idea? Right. So like at the end of the day, it's what are we doing to create an environment where that's okay to do, that we're going to pick you up when you fall, but hopefully we're going to give you a better idea so that you don't have to fall so much, you know? And I think that that's the thing about life. And I think that Elizabeth and I try to shadow is we want people to not have to have as hard a life as we've had to get to where we are now, right? We want people to struggle less, to thrive more. And hopefully we can be a sounding block. We can be a ray of light. We can be a shoulder to cry on or a hand to help pick you up. At the end of the day, that's all we actually have is what we choose to give and why we choose to give it.
It's interesting that, I mean, is it okay if we talk, I mean, I assume because it's public record that we can talk about the fact that where Elizabeth's family is from and your family and kind of both being in the public spotlight?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Pete, I didn't expect to be here. You know, I didn't expect, I didn't expect to be able to build a life 180 degrees in the different direction of what I grew up with. I didn't expect to be here talking to you. I didn't expect to find and gain the strength to talk about what I've been through. Elizabeth is the first IVF baby in the United States. And so there was pressure on her before she was born. There was pressure on her parents that nobody should have, that nobody should have to experience something this extraordinary difference. You're going about bringing a baby into this world in a unique time and in a unique way. But they wanted her so badly, they were willing to do anything to bring her into this world. And me, I tried to leave this world at 11. I tried to get away from the pain, get away from not being loved. And for her to see something special in me when we met, like this could go, like, I could talk to you for days about what it means to me for Elizabeth to love me. But even more than that is my willingness to allow her to love me. I grew up in a place where men were not thought of very highly. The word asshole and men were used in front of me every day in the house I grew up in. And so I'm a boy. I just wanted to be loved. I needed to be loved. I needed some positive attention. I needed to be cared about for being me. And so I did everything in my power on a daily basis to wear every hat I possibly could, to walk on all the eggshells, because I loved them. My mom's the oldest of 9 children. She's the oldest of Jim and Mary Pearsall's children. It's a blessing that I'm here, that I didn't die at 11. That God spared my life. And there are many people out there who may not want to hear that, you know, God loves us and God isn't fearful hatred, you know, and God can't live our lives for us, but he's going to be there to support you if you do something to help the world. And I guess I was bold enough and strong enough as an 11-year-old boy to realize that if there's no love here, then why am I here? If I'm not appreciated for being here, then what good is being here? And my conversation with him wasn't words, it was a feeling. It was, Alan, you're important. Your life is just beginning. You're bold. You care. You share. You believe in something better. You ask the tough questions. You don't get to just come home, even though home is where you belong. Life is about what you choose to give through the struggle, what you choose to give through the pain, through the suffering, in spite of all of that, because you believe that the world deserves a fighting chance. And that's what I was given. I was given a fighting chance. I was gone from the world for about 3 minutes. And I didn't want to come back. And when I came to again, and my mother was standing over me, I was like, ah, man, I just don't want to be here. This is painful. This is really painful. An 11-year-old boy should just want to go play ball. An 11-year-old boy should just want to ride his bike. An 11-year-old boy should just want to give his mom a hug. She don't want to leave the world because she doesn't get that he's important. She doesn't get that she has the man she's looking for right in front of her, who would give anything for her and wanted to shower her with love and attention and care. You know, so all of these moments I have are borrowed time. What am I going to do with it? You know?
Yeah. No, for sure. So it sounds to me like you've got that going on as a kid. It sounds scary. I mean, is that where fear starts to manifest for you as a child?
You know, it's funny because Trevor asked me today. Oh, no. Trevor was saying, hey, you know, boys are, you know, lined up to, you know, be one of a few different things when they grow up. You know, a fireman, a police officer, an astronaut, a doctor. And I said, Trevor, I didn't want to be any of those things. I wanted to be the center fielder for the Boston Red Sox. But I never wanted to be the Boston Red Sox center fielder for myself. I never wanted to play baseball for me. It didn't matter how good a baseball player was. It didn't matter the time and the effort and the passion and the purpose I put into the game of baseball. It was never for me. Because of the house I grew up in. Baseball took my grandfather away. Baseball created a deep mental illness in my grandfather that was perpetuated by his father. And so his goal every day was to be an amazing baseball player. But he also chose to become a father. He also chose to become a husband. But at the end of the day, he chose baseball over my family. And so baseball to me, everything in my mind every day was sign a baseball contract, make a lot of money, give it to my family, and hopefully it'll take the pain away. Hopefully it will help them see men in a different light. Hopefully it will help them see me in a different light. Hopefully it will help them to accept me and my love for them. And I was born 3 days before my Aunt Patty's birthday, and she's the youngest of the nine. And so my biggest fear when I could start to realize my life was, Patty, did I take away the joy of your birthday being born so close to your birthday? And she was like, no, Alan, you were much anticipated, you know? And for a while there, you know, I was everybody's best friend. I was a little kid everybody wanted to play with. I was the one for 2 years. I was the only kid for 2 years before a couple of my cousins were born. And so you get all that attention and, you know, you start to expect it. And my godparents, my Aunt Doreen, and my Uncle Bill, you know, they did everything with me growing up through the years until things got difficult, till I started asking the tough questions, till I started, getting angry and frustrated at what I was in. So yeah, fear. I feared being myself. I feared doing anything for myself. My mom always said if I did anything for myself, I was being selfish. But that's what she learned from her mother. Because my mom being the oldest, my Nana put all the pressure on her to take care of her brothers and sisters, but never the position. My Nana wanted the position, but she wanted my mother to do all the work. And so my aunts and my uncles, unfortunately, took advantage of my mother because she was never given the power and the position of the oldest sister. And please listen to her. And then that was put on me by my mother. And then it's just a perpetual vicious cycle that lasted 37 years.
Is that what led to, what was it, trying to drown some of that out? Was that what led to drinking?
I mean, it was a self-medication that was allowed, right? It was a self-medication that is allowed. It's a self-medication that's normalized, right? It's in your face 24/7. You watch a football game and Bud Light is in your face at all times. Single malt scotches, whiskeys, bourbons, now hard seltzers, craft brews, right? I mean, they're all there to take away the pain and the suffering you're going through for about 4 or 5 hours. But at the end of the day, the hangover kicks in and the next day happens and the struggle continues again. And at some point, I had to look at it. What am I doing? Is this okay? Why am I doing this? What am I hiding from? What do I need to deal with? What's the underlying cause? What am I still not handling well? Why am I going to the drink at the end of the day? What's the problem? What's the purpose of the letting loose, so to speak, that I can't do sober in a healthy way?
Did you take to sobriety right away, or you had fits and starts? How does that work for you?
I'm a tenacious person. I go at it full bore, cold turkey, get it done. Whenever I needed a drink, I was strong enough to say, okay, I'm not going to have a drink if I need a drink. If I want a drink, it's one thing. But if I need a drink, okay, I'm going to need to let that go. And that worked for a while. But in the past few years, it was getting perpetually worse because I was giving more and more. I was giving to the world more and more and more, but I wasn't getting anything. I wasn't getting as much in return as I was giving. And so it was creating this really big void inside of me because I hadn't yet come to the point of true realization and true wisdom that what you give is what fills you up. What you give is purposeful, and there's no need to look for something in return. The thing that you get in return is the peace of mind knowing you did your best to help yourself and someone else. Like hopefully this podcast will do for one person. I would love it to hit a million people, but if it touches one person, that's what matters. You know, so when I chose to get sober, Elizabeth had, she worked for Back on My Feet, who helped the homeless and those in recovery, through running. I worked with an organization in Boston called Phoenix Multisport, and they're throughout the country now as well. They're actually in partnership with the Red Sox now, which is pretty cool. And so Elizabeth was like, you should check this organization out, totally up your alley. You can go there and support people in recovery. And so what the Phoenix Multisport does is they offer physical fitness for free if you've been sober for 48 hours. All they ask is that you respect the other people around you and that you respect yourself enough to be sober when you walk in their doors. So I went there as a supporter, and that was, I think that was like in June or July of 2017, 2018, something like that, right around that. I'm kind of lost in the time. And so I started going there and they do the workouts and you can be a supporter of those in recovery. And so I was going there and supporting people in recovery. But it started to dawn on me that I was kind of a hypocrite. Like I was going to this and I was doing this, but I wasn't dealing with my own problems as well. These people were trying their damnedest to stay sober, to battle their demons with help of a community like the Phoenix. And so over time, a few months, Elizabeth and I were in Falmouth to pick up bibs for the Falmouth Road Race for her runners. And it was August 17th, which was my last drink. We went to a Mexican restaurant for some lunch, and I had a glass of rosé. And the next day, I was like, I want to try to be sober for 30 days. That was it. I wasn't looking to do any more than that. I was just trying to see if I could handle whatever my problems were, because I was pretty good with everything else. I was managing my mental illness. I was running. I was doing all those things that I handle my mental illness with, photography, all that stuff, you know, taking action in my life instead of procrastinating, getting up, doing the small things. You know, the first mile is the hardest, all that kind of stuff, all those affirmations I needed in my head to do that. But alcohol was still a major part of my life. And so on August 18th, 2018, I made a decision to start climbing that mountain to sobriety. And what was 30 days became 60 days, 60 days became 90 days, 90 days became 120. And then I got all the way to 365 days and I ran the Falmouth Road Race myself on my sober anniversary to celebrate that for the Heron Project. And the Heron Project helps those in recovery. Chris Heron used to play basketball for the Boston Celtics, and he has had a really bad battle with addiction himself. And so he goes and he speaks to kids about why they start using in the first place, as opposed to how do we get you to stop. So his goal is the first day, not the last day. And so wanting to support them and having a lot of people who supported the Heron Project, it was really important for me to run for them to celebrate being a year sober. And it was just the most amazing day. But I had run my first sober marathon in March in LA for the Heron Project. And so all of these things I was doing sober and thriving. I think the thing that I found at the Phoenix the most was that their staff are in recovery. Their staff was thriving. And I was like, well, why can't I do that? What's the problem? I'm a strong kid. I'm a tenacious person. Why am I struggling with this? And those are important questions. Those questions are important. Why am I doing this? Why am I acting this way? Why am I allowing this to lead me, this to guide me, this to be me? And so all those steps along the way that have gotten me here to 640, almost 50 days sober, I fear the alternative far worse than I feel that fear the struggle anymore. And I guess that, you know, wanting to come on here and talk to you about my fears of success, I guess my idea of success is actually kind of misguided, because I actually believe I am successful now. But I believe that in the world, the way it is, I'm not looked at as successful. There was a troll on my Instagram, and I posted a picture of my morning view. And I don't know who this person was. His avatar or his screenshot was a picture in a Jason Voorhees mask. And he said, why don't you stop mooching off your wife and get a real job? And it really hit me. I was like, is he right? Is he right? Is who I've chosen to be, who I've chosen to become, is that not the way I should be living? Should I not be a vulnerable man? Should I not be dealing with and fighting and battling my scars from the past? Should I just be out there working and struggling and stressing and not being part of my family's life? Should I live the life my grandfather lived? should I be searching for fame? These are real solid fears that I have, and I'm not the only one. I can't be the only one that wonders and worries and fears, am I good enough as myself?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because you're talking about societal measures of success, money, power, fame, versus internal measures of success. Am I a good person? Am I helping others? Am I a good father? Am I a good husband? All the things that kind of go with life. And the way that you describe it kind of reminds me of imposter syndrome, which we've talked about on this program before. I'm not sure if you relate to that or not, but imposter syndrome
I think it's all part of it. Right?
Yeah.
I think it's all part of who we're trying to be as a person. Are we giving our best to the moment? When most people aren't going to understand what that means because they're hiding in plain sight, trying to be something somebody else told them they need to be, they should be, they want them to be. Well, I never listened to anybody. All right. I didn't want to listen to anybody who was full of shit. But I didn't want to be known as someone who was full of shit either. So people didn't really listen to me growing up. I was trying to be that supportive person my whole life. This person that I am today is the person I've been my whole life. And I realized that if I'm going to say something, it better matter. I don't care if somebody actually listens to it or not, because the person who needs it and the person who hears it, that's who I'm worried about. I'm not worried about the people that don't. So I learned that if I'm going to say something, it needs to matter, because most people don't listen to half the shit you say anyways. So what can I trigger in somebody that's going to help them hopefully look at themselves and say, whoa, hold on a second. What's my passion? What's my purpose? Why am I here?
So going back to the troll real quick, I mean, you talked about the questions that it triggered within your own mind. What did you do next? Like, did you answer those? Did you talk to your wife about it? No. What did you do?
I told Elizabeth about it. Actually, I just handed the phone to her, right? And I let her read it. And that's why Elizabeth and I work so well. She looked at me and said, Alan, that guy doesn't matter. Whether it's a guy or a woman or a bot or whatever it is. She said, Alan, you matter. You matter to me.
Yeah,
That's what I've been looking for, Pete, my whole life.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it, man. I relate to this one because of the fact that, you know, I left my job to pursue other things like this and try to get a little bit of a handle on what was going on in my life too, and redefining success. So I totally relate to that. And as you can imagine, I mean, having a few podcasts out there, I get a few trolls and I've reacted poorly to them so many times. And over the last year, something like that, like if I respond at all, it's usually something to the effect of, hey, I hope your life is awesome. Like, let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
Right.
Why
are you taking this out on me? Right. They're looking for you to react negatively, to punch back. Right. And I think if I don't do what I'm trying to teach Trevor to do, if I don't do what I'm trying to set as an example for a young man coming into this world, hopefully better than I was when I was 9. You know, and I'm telling him, if they go low, oh, high. If I don't do that myself, then I have no right to be an example to him. I have no right to try to help him through this life. I don't have any right to push my pain and struggles onto this kid unless it can teach him to be stronger than me. It can teach him to stand up for me. It can teach him to stand up for himself. They can teach him to stand up for others. We are not here to suppress our children. We are here to empower them to be bigger, better, bolder, and stronger than us, beside us, with a gentle hand and an open heart.
Yeah, I think that you hit something hard there that I I've been trying to figure out how to say, right? But which is, be bold yet vulnerable.
Right.
And it's not an easy place to live. And that discomfort is magnified on social media when you try to live it out loud, right? And
sure.
And I think you do a pretty good job of that. You've started a great couple of great groups, and you share your photography, which is incredible and super touching. And, you know, I read into it probably too much, but that's just kind of how I think. But I just love the way you frame things on there. And it's got to be a great outlet for you. And I'm not, like, I look at your photography as a huge success. I have no idea if you're selling anything or not. Doesn't matter to me, right? I just look at the art itself. But I could see how others would say, yeah, okay. So you take some pictures. Right?
Yeah.
And how do you overcome that? I mean, do you look at yourself as a successful photographer?
I have my day. I wish my work was on more people's walls, of course, because that's the ultimate goal, is not to keep it in my computer or in my phone. It's that someone appreciated it enough to want to look at it every day. Right? But it's my view. But even more than that, Pete, I can't say enough that God works in mysterious ways, because in 2010, when I hit my second rock bottom, my first one was 11. My second one was when I was 36 and a half years old, January 4th, 2010. Is this all I have to offer myself? Is this all I have to offer the world around me? You know, it's a long story. There's articles out there that you can read about me. If you Google Alan Shearer bipolar, there's an article from the Fitchburg paper that will really get in depth into this kind of stuff, that I don't want to kind of stray off the path here. But
I can link that in the show notes, though, because I'm sure there are going to be people who need to read stuff like that. So I'll link that up.
Where was I going? I was going. I don't know where I was going anyway. Let's keep moving. Let's keep moving, because I forget where I'm trying to be. Photography for me. Okay. So picking up the camera. All right. So I was working. When I decided to live my own life, when I decided to be responsible for myself, when I decided to be accountable, it was ultimately my fault if I didn't do something more healthy to not be a victim anymore of my past circumstances. It was February, so it was about a month, maybe a month and a half after I had that epiphany about where I was headed, or where I hoped to be headed through the fog of not knowing what's in store. And so I was working at Sandrine's Bistro across the street from Harvard University. So, you know, I try to get smarter through osmosis, you know, work right by Harvard so you see what can happen. You know, I was serving lunch every day to Elizabeth Warren. You know, I was doing all that kind of stuff. And on February 21st, I'll never forget it, I was walking to the kitchen to get something for a guest. And my general manager, who actually went to high school with my brother on the Cape, was talking to my coworker, Alex, and he was talking to her about how he was selling a Canon Rebel digital camera body. And I wasn't really paying attention to it. I had to get to the kitchen and get something, because, you know, I was going to take care of that guest. You know, as a server, you're focused on making as much money as you possibly can. And so your focus is get what that guest needs. And before I knew what I was saying, the words "I'm buying it" were coming out of my mouth, and I was taken aback. I was like, "What am I saying?" And the next thing, my manager's like, "Don't worry about it. That's fine. We'll take it out of a couple of your checks." And Alex is saying, "I don't have a lens for you, but you can go over to Hunt Camera and Video and buy a 50mm 1/8 Canon lens. It's only $99, and you can learn to become a photographer, or you can learn it. You know, you can use that lens, Alan, and it will be great for you, taking photos with this camera." And so from that moment, I gave myself permission to be a terrible photographer. I gave myself permission to learn how to frame something. I gave myself permission to get out there into the world and start learning to live. That camera was my shield, but it was also my stained glass. it gave me an opportunity to share my view of the world with other people globally.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, it sounds to me a little bit like you took like this life that was I'm going to just call it like a huge mess, right? It's just a messy room. And you started to try to find ways to repurpose parts of it that were messy but weren't broken. Then you tried to find some beauty within that broken stuff. And then you figured out how to break out and look from that mess from a different angle. Take pictures of it, find lessons from it, and then share it. I mean, that to me is what life is, right? Life is a big fucking mess. So
right.
It's pretty awesome that you were able to find your way through it and are thriving. I mean, do you think you're thriving now?
I have an amazing life, and I'll bitch and moan and I'll whine and complain a lot when I'm frustrated, but I have the perfect wife. She looks at me and says, I get it. You need more than that. You need someone who understands that life is difficult. Life sucks a lot. It's not about the good times. Good times come and go rather quickly. What are you doing to get through the suck together? You know? The struggle's real. Elizabeth and I learn every day to suffer less in it. Just thrive through it. We don't sit and think we have enough. We don't sit and think this is it. When it's time to do something different, we make the tough choice to do it, to see what's possible, to see what's better, to see what's real and what's Memorex, and what are we capable of? Are we capable of battling this mess together better?
That's turning fear of success on its head, you know? It sounds like you're on the right path there. And you guys are Pete, always think, doing good, so.
Yeah. I think, Pete, what I just do is I look at it this way. The only thing you can do is take action, right? It doesn't matter. The moment you sit in your head and allow whatever those demons are and whatever shadows you have left to beat you up, it's possible for them to win. That's the only way they can win, is if we sit in it and allow them for us to be their punching bag. Right? It can't win if we take action. It doesn't matter what that action is. It can just be brushing our teeth. It can just be getting out of bed. It can be that first mile on a walk. It can be that first mile on a hike. It can be that first mile on a whatever, on a run or whatever. It doesn't matter. Do you choose to do to get away from the voices in your head and hopefully guide yourself in a more healthy direction in the moment you're in? Because we only actually have the moment we're in. What are we doing with it? If we sit there and we bitch and moan and whine and complain but don't actually do anything, are we actually living or just existing?
Man, I think that's a good place to wrap this up. I mean, this has been a great discussion, some great insights. And if people want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So they can find me on Facebook at stigmafighter.alanshearer. You can find me at Instagram at the same handle. I try to kind of keep it straight, stigmafighter.alanshearer. If you want to keep track of my fitness exploits and my road to my 60K 2-year sober run, you can find me on Instagram at strongbeginswithin. If you want to look at my photography, 500px.com/Alan Shearer Photographer. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can, email me at, AlanShearer37@gmail, or you can call me 617-797-4319. I'll answer the phone.
Nice. Awesome.
And if I can't, you know, and if I can't answer the phone, I'll get back to you. If you need support, if you need guidance, if you need someone to just listen to you yell and scream and get rid of it, I can do that too. We're not supposed to go through this alone, nor should we try.
All right, I got to ask one more question. Why 60K?
It's 37.3 miles, the most important numbers in my life.
All
Everything
right.
about me is 37. If you add up all the numbers in my birthday, it's 37. I'm 3 years older than my sister, 7 years older than my brother. It's God's number. I'm not by accident. I'm here on purpose. The point three is because 73 is when I was born. It's 10 as well, you know, and it's, if you look up 37 or 373 in numerology, in the Hebrew religion, the Jewish religion, you can see a lot about why it's important, why it's valuable, why three and sevens are important to me. It's my grandfather's baseball number. There's just a lot of things that may be coincidental, but I don't believe it. I don't believe anything's coincidental. I believe we make our luck, we make our blessings by what we choose to do and how many times a day we get out of our own way.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on, sharing your story, getting some positive vibes out into the world. At the end of every episode, we talk about defeating the stigma. Last week's episode for No Fear Friday was about somebody's, you know, life that was saved because they listened to this podcast. So we, like you said earlier, if we reach one person, that's really all that matters. We've reached one. So my goal with this podcast is there. I'm not Joe Rogan, so I'm probably not, you know, touching a million people, but that's okay because one life is just as important as 1 million in my book. So thanks for sharing everything and being on here, and we'll catch up soon, brother.
An ultimate pleasure.
That talk with Alan went places I didn't expect, but I sure am glad it happened. I hope you got something out of it too. As we wrap up this episode, I want to thank all of our patrons, especially our producers, the Money, Motivation, and Motherhood podcast, the Endurance for Everyone podcast, and Dava Sylvia. Your continued support is amazing. And as always, remember, the way forward is together. The time to conquer is now.
Thank you for listening to the No Fear Project. Original music is from Josh and Dean. Join us on social media by searching the No Fear Project on Facebook and Instagram. Check out thenofearproject.com for more information, including in-person presentations on fear, customized for your organization. The No Fear Project is committed to helping those with mental illness get help and to defeating the stigma. If you have any thoughts of harming yourself or suicide, please contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline for help now at 800-273-8255. Remember, you are not alone. The No Fear Project is a production of Paragon Media, all rights reserved.